So I haven't gave you the title, I will give you now. So this is... what's so funny? I don't know. Do I stand here? Is that okay? Okay. So this is something I've been thinking about only for 6 years or so, so it's brand new, and still in progress. And this is, so this title includes reality, but it has some specific mathematical meaning and also physical meaning. So this work is based on my work and also several collaborations with several people, many people. Mainly I will talk about the work I'm doing with a student and another person, Johannes Walther. And I did it to something I learned from many other people. So I want to show you something which I have used in another talk for mathematician. So this is, maybe I want to start here. So this is transparency used in one of the lectures I gave towards mathematicians. And this is the lecture on mirror symmetry, and it was the third. And so far, meaning I have spent two previous lectures for close-oriented strings. So there are many beautiful stories for mirror symmetry, for close-oriented strings. But there are, I think we expect far more interesting stories for other strings, like open-oriented strings, unoriented strings, and heterotic strings, and also strings with in a flux background, string theory with flux background, with background flux. And so this open-oriented strings has been studied actually for a long time, 10 years, more than maybe 10, 15 years. And many things have started with the work of proposal by Kontsevich called homological mirror symmetry on the mathematical side, and also from the physics side, the work by Joe showing that this D-brain sources for Ramon-Ramon field. But what I want to focus in this talk is not this. There are actually this itself still have many more many more interesting stories which is not discovered yet. But I also want to move on to another kind of string theory, which is unoriented strings. And there are other things, but I of course don't have time, and I don't have content to discuss about the other cases. So I just want to focus at a very small part of this unoriented strings. So in string theory, to formulate unoriented strings, it's nowadays called the language used is orientifold. I don't know who invented it. Is it you?
I thought that nobody would ever have to say this word. It was an obscure thing.
I'm looking for a Japanese translation of this, but I can't find a better word than this. Anyway, so I just go quickly. The data we need is a space with an involution, or the space, what I mean by space in string theory is actually in perturbative string is actually just two-dimensional quantum field theory with involution. And orientifolding means gauging this Wolschi theory by this Z2, generated by a combination of this involution and the Wolschi involution that reverses the orientation of the string. So if you consider a sigma model where X is really a target space, then you will be considering summing over Wolschi diagrams, sum over map, which sends this omega to tau. And you can also consider open strings, and you need to specify boundary conditions, and that's given by D-brains. And the geometrical ordinary large volume data for the brain, D-brain, is submanifold W and the vector bundle on that submanifold. The brain wrapped on W and supporting a vector bundle. It is a Hermitian vector bundle with a connection. And if you want to do oriented fold, you want this data to be invariant under this involution. Invariant meaning that this submanifold to be mapped to itself, and also this map tau should lift to a bundle map from E dual to E, so that all the data are preserved, metric, fiber metric, and connections. All are preserved. And and you require this kind of condition. Transpose. Maybe this follows. I don't remember the detail. Yeah. Anyway, this is the kind of condition you required for the invariant object. Invariant brain. And let's consider a more special case where you consider string theory formulated on X. Let's assume it's a Calabria threefold times a four-dimensional Minkowski space. And if you require n equal to one supersymmetry on this four dimensions, you are forced to consider a very special type of brains and oriented folds, either A type or B type, or type 2A or type 2B. And for A type, tau must be anti-holomorphic or equivalently anti-symplectic involution. Anti-symplectic means fullback of the Kähler form is minus itself. And if you consider D brains, this the locus W must be a special Lagrangian, and E must be a flat bundle over it. And you can read the light spectrum, and it's just given by some homological data of the involution as well as this brain. This HF is something called flare homology. I won't go into detail. It's just an open string ground state. And interactions can be read. Some of the interactions can be actually computable, exactly computable, by finding out what is the so-called Gromov-Witten invariant. And in particular, it's for A-type model, it is essentially holomorphic map from the cover to the target, which sends this omega to tau. And if you consider a Wolschi of the special Euler characteristic, you get a superpotential term. And for B type, you need tau to be holomorphic and submanifold to be complex submanifold and the bundle on it to be holomorphic. This data can be generalized to so-called coherent sheets, and in particular, you need stable coherent sheets. And again, the light spectrum can be read from the topological data of the target space, and morphological data determined from this brain. And holomorphic coupling in this B-type case is determined by studying the deformation theory of these data. And mirror symmetry exchanges type 2A and type 2B. And some problem is difficult on one side, gets mapped to easy problem on the other side. So this is the large volume ordinary description of brains, but there are actually other ways to describe it.
So, I'm sorry.
Yes.
So W is stable under tau?
W? You are talking about
here?
Yeah. Okay.
W taken to itself by tau in this picture?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Tau pull back of the.
Yeah. And so it is, so yes, I was going to talk about another way to describe D brains. And so I just used the submanifold and vector bundle limit, but actually you can use another thing to specify a D brain, and it is to, so this location of brain and also the vector bundle or gauge field corresponds to massless open strings. But actually, you can use also tachyonic open strings to determine D-brain. So include tachyons in the D-brain data. And let me just describe the story before oriented folding. So the data for the type, let's start with type 2D. So the data for this more general description of the D-brain is vector bundle E and something called T, and vector bundle is a Z2-graded vector bundle over the total space X. And T is an endomorphism of E, which is odd. So if you diagonalize, if you choose the basis according to the splitting, direct sum, it takes this form, off-diagonal form. And if T, tachyon field, is isomorphism, then you should regard it as nothing. No D-brain. Roughly, the correspondence to the previous picture is that the zero locus of T, or the rank, reduced rank locus of T, corresponds to the position of the D-brain. And from this identification, so this is actually, I have ignoring all these contributions by Ashok Sen and Edward Witten. But let me just say that. Because of this relation, if T is isomorphic, it should be regarded as nothing. Then you may want to regard this E and E plus F, when F 0 is isomorphic to F1. We want to identify them. And this data will give you the classification of this data modulo this relation will give you this group called K-theory group of X. And for type 2A case, the data you need is slightly different. It's close, E and T. E is now ungraded vector bundle over X. And T is an endomorphism, which is Hermitian. And if T is an isomorphism with some certain eigenvalues, like 1 or minus 1, it is again be regarded as nothing. And this topological classification of these data, modulo this relation, give you this something called K minus 1 of X. This is the point of view taken by Petzl, Hetzler, or Jama.
What's
Yeah, it's like that. Like zero of T is the local.
Yeah.
Oh, No, yes. When it cuts through zero, you should regard it as the location of the defect. So, yeah, it would be nicer if I can show you more examples. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe let me show you. So let's consider some strange brain, like. No, you can't. Okay, let's not do it. from the time constraint, I won't do it. Okay. So let's move on to the case with orientables. So obviously you need to include the information of this involution. So the data is E, like as before, it's graded, T odd, and gamma, which is as before, this bundle map. And you require this T to be invariant in this sense. And there are various cases you can consider. This gamma can preserve this V2 grading or reverses the V2 grading. And gamma can be symmetric or anti-symmetric. So these cases actually correspond to various K-theory groups called KR group, I will tell you later, with minus some even number. And for type 2A, the data is again ungraded vector bundle, Hermitian endomorphism, and this bundle map. And in this case, this tachyon field is even or odd. And actually, minus is minus tachyon to minus tachyon can be regarded as some gauge symmetry, so this is allowed. And again, symmetric or anti-symmetric, so there are again four cases. And these data, the topological classification of these data, gives rise to this another kind of KR group, K-theory group. So let me just tell you more formally what's this KR group. So this is introduced by Atiyah, Michael Atiyah. And it is, let me start with the basic thing, which is when the T is zero. This is the Grothendieck group of so-called real vector bundle. Real vector bundle is, with capital R, is a vector bundle with antilinear bundle map covering this involution. So for this case, X is assumed to be a space with a fixed chosen involution. Such a space is also called real space. And so this looks a little bit different from the previous cases, but it's close. Physicists always assume vector bundles to have Hermitian metric. And this condition is precisely this linear bundle map from the dual to itself covering tau, which is, in this case, symmetric in this sense. So this is KR group. The Grothen group classifying such a real vector bundle. And you can also consider KR minus P, and this formally, initially it is defined by KR group of X product with a P-dimensional ball with the infinity or the boundary to be identified. And this is actually the same thing as the space of, the group of homotopy classes of map from X to certain space. And this is a certain huge space, certain space, which is equivariant. So the map, there's a tau involution tau here, tau here, and there's an involution associated with the complex conjugation. And this is HC. H is a real Hilbert space. HC is a tensor product with its complexification. And so it has natural complex conjugation. And F of something is the space of Fredholm operators. And upper P requires that this operator to be commutative with some Clifford algebra modification, which is assumed to be in to be present on H.
Just, is there time for subtleties?
No. please correct me afterwards. Sorry, maybe I said it wrong. Please, by this comment by Ezra, please do not trust this. It should be close.
The homotopies also have to be Z2 invariant, I guess.
Okay, okay, let's talk about it then. But let's next talk about so the goal it was about the T duality, this mirror symmetry, but before that let's talk about T duality, which is the baby version of mirror symmetry. So there's K theory or KR theory is a group for the Veblen charges. And if you have a duality, the Veblen charges should be mapped to Veblen charges under the duality. So that should hold, of course, for T duality. And there's actually a very simple way to realize this map of Veblen charges. So let's just consider space X times n-dimensional torus, and its T-dual n-dimensional torus to be replaced by its dual torus. So when n is even, it's 2a to 2a and 2b to 2b. When n is odd, it's 2a to 2b and 2b to 2a. And so the Veblen charge is classified by this, k for 2b and k minus 1 for 2a. And to obtain the dual Veblen charge, you first lift this to the space product space of x times tn and times t tilde n. And on this space, you have something called Poincaré bundle. And you just tensor it, tensor the vector bundle here, and you obtain a vector bundle here. And then you have an index of Dirac operator acting on this in this direction of the space. And then you just take the index, then what you get is k minus I shifted by minus n of this dual space. So that's the T-dual map. And this is really well motivated by looking at how brain folds behave on the T-dual.
Which spin structure are you using for the Dirac operator?
Tn? Yeah. I think it's the standard one, a periodic one. Yeah, it is periodic one. And this similar thing holds for type 2 oriented force, and what's most important is this index minus I is shifted by the dimension. Here I'm talking about the case where the involution acts trivially on Tn. Then, as you know, under T-duality, the involution acts as the inversion on this T-dual direction. So that's what happened. And Stroming-Joya-Zaslov proposed that the mirror symmetry of Calabria threefold is T-duality along special Lagrangian T3 vibrations. So just apply this. And we know that Veblen charges on type 1 is KO theory of X. In other words, KR theory of X with involution to be the identity. And so I just follow this, then you get this. So this must be the Veblen charge that corresponds to the mirror of type 1 on Calabi-Yau. And this argument can be used to see what is the right KR theory to describe deep brain charge in this type 2 oriented fold on the simple space like this. Okay. So what we want is not just this topological level of theology, but more finer level. And in particular, one way to say it is how to obtain the analog of this conservative homological mirror symmetry conjecture, which in one way to say it is the equivalence of the two categories, derived category of coherent sheaves on X to Fukaya category of Lagrangian submanifolds on the mirror. And these descend, if you forget about the detail, you get the topology, then you have a map from K group to K minus 1 group. So the question is, we know what this is and where it comes from. So to know what it, to answer this, we want to answer what replaces this, in this case with oriented folds. And this is actually a big question and very interesting question. I can only give you a partial answer at this moment. Yes, I think so. Okay, so let me just give you a very elementary preliminary answer to this. So let's just recall how you, let's say, this side of the story, this to this. So let's, of course, in the story before orient holding. So, in general, type 2B, you get only Z2 graded vector bundles. But in order to get this derived category, you need a Z graded vector bundle or coherent sheaves. And this even part is the even part is the sum of even graded parts, and the odd ones are odd graded parts. And the tachyon is decomposed into holomorphic and anti-holomorphic parts, and holomorphic part is required to be to shift the grade by one, and it's required also to disperse to zero. So from this data you get a complex. So that's how you get complex of sheaves. So you just want to mimic this. You have this data, and you want to do a similar thing, and this is what you naturally led to. But one subtlety, maybe it's too much detail, but one subtlety is that what this dual means. We want the parity, we want this to be involution, but sometimes if you take, say, coherent sheaves, double dual isn't the same, or isn't even isomorphic to the original one. So there are some technical details, but I'm sure there is a way to handle these difficulties. Here?
Yeah.
Like here?
Yeah, but I can't read them.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so sorry. So you have to choose, first of all, where to start, and then Q. Then it increases to this grading by one, But in this direction, because you are taking the dual, so I have star here, so the dual.
One of them's q minus 1 and one of them's q plus 1.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't read it from here.
Sorry, no, you are right, you are right.
okay. I know I'm going to
This is star.
Yeah.
This is star.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, I have some remnants of the correct data.
Okay.
Okay, so there's this difficulty, and maybe I myself want to solve it, or maybe some mathematicians want to solve it. But I'm sure it will be solved. But, yes. Yeah, that's one way, that's possibly one way to do this. But maybe someone in the audience has immediate answers. Okay, but in the remaining time, I want to discuss something else, which is partly to solve this problem and also for its own right interest. So maybe I should say that So there's a relation between this large volume limit. So this string theory is parametrized by moduli space, the data for this Wolschi theory and also this other things. But one interesting moduli space is the scalar moduli space. And in the large volume limit, we have a geometry. And so far I have been talking about that part of the that corner of the totality of string theory, but there are other regimes which is completely non-geometric. And one good story, good aspect of mirror symmetry or aspect of the system with some supersymmetry is that you can consider analytic continuation to those non-geometric regimes, and in particular those things called like derived categories or square categories are those that are actually constant in this derived category is constant along this scalar moduli, and square category is constant along this complex moduli. And there's actually a very good useful corner, the other corner, completely non-geometric corner of the scalar moduli, and this is called Geppner point, or in other words, Landau-Ginzburg orbifold point. And there's a recent interest about this point, and also there's an extensive study of the relation of this Landau-Ginzburg point to the large volume point. And so one thing I want to do is try to consider this oriented folding at this Landau-Ginzburg point. So let me just move on to that part of the story. So this part of the talk is mainly done in collaboration with Johannes Walger. So let me just review what the brains, V-type D brains in Landau-Ginzburg model. So let's just consider very simple polynomial superpotential to define a Landau-Ginzburg model. And the data to define D-brain in mathematical language object is a matrix factorization of the superpotential. This is a matrix, say 2R by 2R matrix of this form, whose entries are polynomials in this n variable. And it squares to the superpotential. In other words, this block part, Fg is equal to Gf is equal to W, times the identity. And equivalent, so there's another way to say this. Let's consider M a module over this ring, polynomial ring, which is Z degraded, And Q is an odd endomorphism that squares to the superpotential. It's simply saying the same thing, but I'm going to use this M and D to grade it in those words, so I'm explaining it here. And open string states can be a model of actually this is a crude model of open string states, is just a home of this kind of module. So let's take two of such matrix factorizations. Just take the matrix polynomial entry matrices from one to another. Because each of them is z-degraded, you can consider also this home space to be z-degraded. And there's this map D that swaps even, that exchanges even and odd, which is the model of the supercharge, is given by this commutator, z-degraded commutator of this cube. And the ground state, this is actually not a crude model, this is an exact result. The ground state, open string ground state, are in one-to-one correspondence with this D cohomology class. And there's a this subject is well studied. In particular, Anton and E. Lee have given a closed formula for this correlator that tells you about this composition of this ground state. And also this interaction with the closed string mode. This is obtained by localization on this supersymmetry fixed point following Kuhlmann buffer argument for the closed string starting point. And next, in order to relate this to a large volume, we want to consider orbitals. Gepner point is van der Ginsburg orbital. So let's assume this W to be a homogeneous polynomial of, say, degree D. Then the van der Ginsburg model, 2D quantum field theory, flows in the infrared limit to a super conformal field theory with this central charge. And the associated R symmetry is comes from this at this level, this phase rotation dressed with this fermion phase rotation. And according to this choice of unit, superpotential has charge 2. And in order to obtain boundary conformal field theory, we also need the matrix factorization also to be homogeneous. Homogeneous in this sense. It's not just this is equal to some specific charge, but with the help of some conjugation with some matrix, you get a charge 1. Q squared is W, so if W has charge 2, Q must have charge 1. And the R symmetry in the infrared limit for this boundary conformal field theory corresponds to this obvious transformation of the open strings or morphism. And so before it was just that you only have even or odd, but this is now refined to with some R charge P. In general, it is just a it's not usually an integer, but a rational number. But if you select some subspace, then this complex is ordinary, not just V2-graded, but V-graded complex. Actually, some of this V-graded complex. So you get a homology group parameterized by this R charge, P. And so this is the story before overfolding, by this homogeneity you get some new data, which is this grading by R charge, not just V2 grading. But let's do overfold, then you get something more interesting. So let's do this VD overfold by this uniform phase rotation by these rules of unity. Then using this homogeneity equation and inserting pi to alpha, you get this equation. And actually what you get from this is that you get you find that this matrix factorization is invariant under this overfold group. So let me just copy this last sentence here. And so this is almost invariant, except this sign. But this Q is odd. So but by conjugation with minus 1 to the F, or I call it sigma in what follows, you get just really invariant. You get the statement that Q is invariant under this overfold group. But we want this to be a group action, so we want to dress this thing by some phase so that this guy has order D. And this phase labels the overfold group representation on this M, which is the Champeyron factor for us. But phi shifted by 2, of course, doesn't do anything, so it's the same. It's just the same overfold group action. So that's the data you need. You have to specify this overfold group action so that this is Q is invariant. And after that, things are obvious. You just have to take, or you have to first define the VD action on this space of open strings. And you just take the VD invariant part. That's it. And R symmetry action is the same as before. But if you look at this formula, if you address this R symmetry action by something used here, you see that actually this R charge can be made into integers. That reduces modulo 2 to the original V2 grading. And so because this is done by this phase, dressing by phase, phi shifted by 2 does change how the R symmetry acts. So this shift by 2 does a non-trivial thing for this V2 grade, sorry, V graded D then. So this is the basic story for this overfold. And actually, this can be really easily connected to a large volume done by mathematicians. And this subject of matrix factorization has been actually studied a long time, not so long, but more than 20 years ago, by a bunch of people in Europe and America. Auslander, Leighton, Nora, and Stuttweiss, and many other people have extensively studied this matrix factorization. And this is related to some algebraic subject called maximal Cohen-Macaulay module over the ring R, which is a polynomial ring divided by this superpotential. Not the Jacobi ring, divided by W itself. And in particular, I don't want to explain what this is, but in this mid-80s work, this MCM, the category of MCM, modulo this projective module, is identified with the derived category of R modules complex of R module, so-called perfect complexes. Perfect meaning finite complex consisting of finitely generated projective modules. So this is some old work. By the way, this person book-wise is in Toronto, and I'm learning very much from him. And this is just what I learned from him. And but what we want is not just this. We want to relate this thing, derived category modulo, essentially modulo projective, to derived category coherent sheaves, which is the modulo, derived category of R modules modulo torsion sheaves. And they are actually the same. That's what's been shown this year by Orloff. So in this particular case of degree D polynomials case, then you can consider hypersurface determined by this degree D polynomial of hypersurface of projective space of dimension n minus 1. And he just related this thing to this thing in the case of Calabiau case. In other cases, there are other junks, but what's interesting for us is this relation. So this is the category of degraded D lengths in Lander-Ginzburg orbifolds, and of course this story of course generalizes to graded ones. So this until this point you can get. What he's done is that he related this to this, and it's very simple and beautiful way. And so there are actually a family of identifications, actually equivalence of categories, and this family is labeled by an integer, and this integer is actually labeled how many times you go around this. A single singular point in the Kähler-Morgan space, so-called conifold point in the language of the mirror. Although I said this is very beautiful, it's really simple, but of course it should be understood from physics point of view and better, and then this will be this will be more interesting. Anyway, so I just wanted to say that this, if you know about this Lander-Ginzburg point, you should know about this, at least this part of this part. Or maybe I should, this is maybe too strong, you need to lift this thing also including this oriented thing. But anyway, you have some handle on it. So let me just now consider this oriented fold in this Lander-Ginzburg B model, B Brayton Lander-Ginzburg model. So first of all, we want to classify what kind of parity is allowed. Say for the type 2B case, you need this you need a holomorphic map of this n variables. And the Lagrangian density includes this part, this F term, and B-type parity actually swaps this left-moving and right-moving fermionic coordinates, just that. So it swaps these two entries in this measure. So the measure gets minus sign. So to cancel it, this internal symmetry must cancel the sign factor by this relation. So tau must be an involution of the superpotential such that superpotential gets sign flipped. So that's the data you need. And so we want to find an action on this brain. by such involutions or the parities. And so in mathematical language, you want to find a functor or contravariant functor on this category of metric factorization, which covers this tau and commute with supercharge, such that its square is isomorphic to the identity functor. So I'm just borrowing math language. In what it means is that this data m, q, and grading, this is minus 1 to the f, sigma, should be mapped to something else. And this open string from q1 to q2 must be mapped to parity image of q2 to parity image of q1. So that's the contravariant mean. And also this supercharge acting on it should be mapped to the other one. So actually, it's easy to construct such things. For example, let's consider this P of M to be the dual module. Here, this M being the free module helps a lot. But anyway, this is just take the dual space and take the dual grading, V2 grading, and then you can just take the, actually you have minus, and then Q transpose with dressing by this tau. And action on the open string is similar to this without this minus sign. Now this is a bit subtle subject because everything is V2 graded, and that means that there's a distinction between bosons and fermions, and when you exchange the position of the two, you need a sign. You get a sign. So when I say transpose, it's not an ordinary transpose, but a V2 grading transpose. So what it means is that, so usually transpose of a metric, of a linear map, is given this formula, by this formula, but in the Z2 graded case, because A and F swaps its position, you get this sign. And the consequence of this is that if you have, oh, sorry, this is a mistake. So this, a consequence of this, so this is true when A and B are both fermionic, but in general, you get, now let's see the proposal I made is a good one. So first of all, Q parity image should again be a metric factorization of W. So there was a minus sign, but if you take the square, the minus cancels, so you get just this. Now you use this rule for this transpose, so you have, because Q are both odd, you get minus signs, and then product and then transpose. Because this Q is a metric factorization, this is W of tau of X, and identity on N, transpose. But we know that this condition for the B-type parity is that W should flip its sign, so that this will cancel this minus sign, you get indeed the metric factorization. And also you can show that it commutes with supercharge is good. And also one important thing is that we want this parity to be involutive in the sense that P squared is isomorphic to identity. So P squared is double dual of M star. And for a free module, it's M W dual of M is isomorphic to M itself. And there's actually a choice here, but let's choose one. And again, you have to be careful about the sign, because everything is V2 grade. Then under this, you see that this is an isomorphism. And actually, there are other ways to obtain this parity functor, say by composition with the sending brain to anti-brain, namely just compose this flipping this orientation of vertebrae. Okay. So if you have an invariant control, so it's just a functor or the parity action on abstract category, but when you want to work on string theory, we want to have some finite brain configuration of finite brains, which are invariant under this parity. So that's what you need. The set of finite set of brains, so each brain is this data, is given by this data, and involution on this level, such that this parity image is isomorphic to this level shifted one. And you have to choose, specify this isomorphism. That's not given this. So this is getting a little bit too technical, but let me just say the main point. So this parity action, so we need really a parity transforming brain to brain and also the string to string. And for this case, it's not what we want, is really involutive action on, say, on the string. On the brain, it's already involutive, and on the strings, it is also involutive. So the parity action on the string is defined naturally this way. If you do it once, you get this. If you do it twice, you get this. And it is given by this. So it is required that this is the same as this. Then you get the condition, such condition on this this isomorphism, UI. Okay. You can also do this similar thing for the overflow case, and yeah, it's just similar to the previous case, except that you need to specify the action on this representation of this overflow group, and there's actually ways to do it. And if you consider invariant brain configuration, you need additional condition for this isomorphism. And if you have this invariant brain configuration, you really want this parity action to be involutive. That will require a similar condition. Now it was, because it's overfold, that you have this stressing by this representation, and also this, you get this phase, not just time, and some, by moving hands, you get a relation of this this phase and this action on this representation. So maybe I should level up. Okay, maybe one interesting thing is this following. Maybe it's obvious. One thing you should expect is the following. So let's consider some invariant irreducible brain. So what I mean is the following. Invariant means parity image is isomorphic to itself. Irreducible meaning this first zeroth cohomology, which usually corresponds to the vector boson for the remaining four dimensions, consists just of identity. Then if you require the two, then you get this condition on this isomorphism. And you need this to be one, to be a member of this brain configuration. But depending on what this is, it can be one or minus one. And only the case with epsilon b is 1 is allowed, but the case with epsilon b is minus 1, you can also allow by doubling or dressing by further Champedon factor. So let's just consider n direct sum of this b, and then you dress this isomorphism by some matrix, gamma, then this is allowed to be a member of this brain configuration when this is satisfied. And this epsilon b is obviously the sign that tells you what is the gauge group of this environing frame. Okay, let me show you some example. Just give you a very basic example, which is this one variable monomial superpotential that flows to so-called n equal to 2 minimal model. But this is very important. This is a building block of this Kepler model. And the so-called card, so this is exactly solvable model, and from other way you get a set of brains, essentially by the work of Cardi. And the Cardi brain, we know what Cardi brain corresponds to in this Landau-Ginzburg language. It's just this factorization. And it has this R charge. And you can also overfold by this VK plus V sub K plus 2 action. And you have a natural, you have a overfold group representation on this Cardi brain. And these levels are related in some specific way. So this is the story before orientable folding. Now let's consider some phase that whose power of k plus 2 is minus 1. Then that will give us a parity. And you can apply this functor p, this, and you can show that this is isomorphic to, again, a Cardi brain with level m shifted to minus 1, and also the orientation is flipped. And there's actually a very good picture to show all this. It is just to take the mirror symmetry. This ZK plus 2 overfold of this minimal model is mirror to original minimal model. And this is mirror, so A, B brains and B type oriented fold here should be mapped to A brains and A type oriented folds. And A brains are lines whose image in the double plane is a real, is parallel to the real line. And such brains are shaped like this. And there's a dictionary between this B brains and this older fold and this A brain. This L labels this opening angle, M labels this average angle. And if you apply the parity, you get minus sign for M, and the orientation is flipped. And if you take the, so in the A type oriented fold, it must be just a complex conjugation that preserves this super charge, the super potential. And say x to x bar, if you apply this, it's just flipped. And this is precisely the data obtained from this parity action in the B sign. Okay, so using this, you can also construct this Kepler model and arrange for the Kepler model and learn how these various gauge groups actually appear. And if the technique is developed, you can also compute this interaction, like computing super potentials. And I shouldn't continue indefinitely. Maybe let me just close just by saying that there's a... Okay, maybe I don't... Okay, I stopped. Thank you. Okay, so for B-type Landau-Ginzburg model, you can actually consider twisting to topological field theory, and you can compute this amplitude. In this closed string case, Waffer did have obtained a closed formula. For open string, Kapustin and Lee had obtained this good formula using residue. And what about this oriented force? And one naive thing you can think about is this RP2 diagram with possibly some insertion of the closed string state, which is represented by this element of Jacobi ring. And you can just do this standard supersymmetric localization technique to find what this is. And the answer is insertion by another closed string state called, let's call it cross-cut state. And cross-cut state is essentially boundary state for the brain wrapped on the fixed-point locus. And it is zero when this is middle-dimensional, when this fixed-point set is not middle-dimensional, but it is non-zero if it is middle-dimensional. And this brain wrapped on the fixed-point set is as follows. So superpotential has to flip its sign under involution. So if you separate this coordinate into eigenvalue minus one part and plus one part, it can be written in this way, where Ri is invariant under parity and R perf is minus one, just minus one. So it just, there's, for this you have a natural matrix factorization. Then you apply this Kapustin-Lee formula to get this boundary with no insertion. And that's the cross-cut state, and you can show using this localization technique that it gives you the right answer.
Spectralization is not canonical.
It's not, yeah, this is not unique, but nevertheless, the answer is...
Is canonical or only up to...
Only up to, yeah. Okay.